Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Scott Snyder, president and CEO of HTX Labs, a Houston-based software startup with a team focused on creating virtual reality technology for training a next-generation workforce. Scott shares how he pivoted to work closely with the Department of Defense on providing the military with innovative technology for training purposes. He also explains how HTX Labs has grown alongside of Houston's innovation ecosystem and where extended reality is headed. Scott, thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Happy to share our story.
Yeah, I'm very excited to learn more about what you do in HTX Labs. So just to start, give us and listeners a brief background on your history and then kind of the origin story of HTX Labs.
Sure, happy to. So yeah, I've been doing this a long time in tech and software, going on 38 years, last 20 of which have been in startups. Started in 2000 in Houston, did our first startup in 2003, primarily focused around oil and gas. I've been in oil and gas for 25 years, working for companies like Landmark Graphics, Schlumberger, and others. Did a startup around integration, oil and gas, participated with Houston Technology Center back in the day, sold that company in 2012 to a large oil and gas data company. And that kind of did our 3-year contract there and got right back into startups. And that's kind of where we kind of kicked off this recent journey with HTX Labs. And I'm happy to talk through all of that and our journey through the early days of at the Surge Shack to Station Houston, and now at the Ion most recently.
So, you know, I know for a lot of innovators, it's not necessarily one light bulb moment, but for you, what was that time that you really realized there was this need for HTX Lab?
Yeah, great question. So after we exited our first startup and we kind of rebooted that company, I was doing some consulting as an advisory role to a company called On Comfort. Was in healthcare VR. Didn't really have an immersive tech background myself, but loved what they were doing. And then I was approached by a company who was kind of dabbling in 3D UI, you know, big screens, and they were interested in getting into virtual reality and looking for investors. So wanted to see if we'd be interested in investing in that company. So we funded a proof of concept around, of all things, active shooter training in virtual reality. Not something you really want to participate in, but it's a thing, and preparing people for that unfortunate incident is unfortunately necessary. So we built a proof of concept, took that to a security conference in Orlando just after the Pulse nightclub event. So it was top of mind, it was different, and we got really good reception. So coming back from that, we decided to go ahead and spin up a company around that, around virtual reality. And that was how, in January of 2017, HTX Labs was born at the Surge Shack and at Station Houston. And we don't really do that anymore. Our real mission around HTX Labs was to take what we felt was amazing technology, virtual reality, augmented reality, extended reality, immersive technology in general, and take that from a primarily consumer focus into the enterprise. So how do you take a headset into ExxonMobil or into MasterCard? It's not a printer, not a server, not a laptop. It's different. And how do you deal with network security and identity management? Who's in the headset? And it's always been around, how do we elevate training? And that's really been our mission for the last 5+ years.
So who's your customer base in general? And I love this idea of taking these consumer focused technologies into you know, companies and using them and utilizing them in that way. So what types of companies are interested in your types of technology?
Good question. Yeah, anybody who's training their workforce, reskilling, upskilling, really should be interested in this technology. Early on, we really tried to focus and pursue the enterprise, and got some proofs of concept, pilot projects, but we're not a venture-backed firm. So we really needed to pick and choose, and we really just could not get momentum for long-term engagements A lot of companies are pursuing this technology for all the wrong reasons, to look innovative, to attract talent from Google, Facebook, Apple. That is not how you build a sustainable training program. Regardless of whether it's immersive tech or PowerPoint or whatever, that's not how you build a sustainable program. So kind of end of 2018, we were approached by the U.S. Air Force, actually at Station Houston. They were in town looking for immersive technology, and somebody pointed them at us, and the rest, as they say, is history. So 3.5 years later, we are fully engaged with the Department of Defense, U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy, talking to the U.S. Army, and our big focus is around training aircraft pilots and aircraft maintainers. So if you fly them or you fix them, that's, they're using our technology to build lessons that really, you know, with a shortage of pilots, with a shortage of aircraft, you can't take an F-16 out of service to train somebody how to maintain it or fly it. But if we can take that experience and put it in a headset, so you can sit on your couch at home and get reps and stay current, stay proficient, it's an amazing use of this technology. So we're really focused on the Department of Defense. They have a clear and present need, national security imperative. We have to be ready. China, Russia, we have to prepare our service members to be ready. The enterprise, we're still trying to figure that out. But right now, probably 95% of our focus is on the Department of Defense.
What was the, you know, at least semi-pivot to Department of Defense from enterprise? You know, what sort of challenges did that pose, taking a company you had, you know, an original vision for and pivoting for that type of space? What were some challenges you had to overcome?
Funding, getting credibility within the military, within the Department of Defense. Fortunately, this lieutenant colonel that we connected with, who works out of AFWERX, which is up in Austin, the Capital Factory, saw something in our platform. Obviously, we weren't doing anything with pilots, aircraft. It was all very enterprise focused, but he saw the platform that we had built and saw an opportunity to bring that into a program called Pilot Training Next, which is basically the next generation of how do we train pilots? How do we get them younger in high school and get them ready to be a qualified pilot within the Air Force? Fortunately, we got on contract pretty quickly as a sub to this pretty significant project. And within 90 days, he said, okay, now you have to go direct to the Air Force because the Air Force needs your technology and it needs to be a direct connection. So we pursued this SBIR program, Small Business Innovation Research Program. And we have leveraged that, what I think is an amazing funding model over the past 3 years. And we've done super phase ones, twos, we're now on a phase three and moving towards a program of record within the Department of Defense, which means we'll be a line item on the national defense budget. So it's been challenging. It's been amazingly rewarding. We love helping our service members to be ready, to be elevated in proficiency. And they're just not getting the training they need within the Air Force. This is not the Air Force of the 80s and 90s. This has to be contemporary military, and we're giving them the capabilities that allow them to develop their own training programs. I can put an F-16 pilot in a headset in a virtual F-16 and let them create their own training courses, which is a completely different approach than just building lesson after lesson after game after game. We're teaching our customers to fish. So think of YouTube on steroids. If you want to figure out how to do something, the first thing you do is you go to YouTube and see if somebody else has already put together a video on how to rebuild a carburetor on a Mustang. That's what we're doing, but we're doing it in a fully 3D, 360 degree immersive environment.
Absolutely. Kind of in the same vein, I mean, you mentioned Capital Factory, but you know, what other resources out there did you tap into to adjust with this? Like I said, the pivot toward DOD and working with them, like if there are startups out there in Houston that are looking to tap into maybe opportunities within the Department of Defense, like what would you tell them to look out for?
What to look out for? What to look for? I think the SBIR program is quite amazing. I mean, this program's been around since the 80s, and it's It's the beautiful thing is it's not DOD money. It's congressional money that's set aside every year that has to be spent. $2.6 billion every year has to be spent on driving innovation, driving tech into the Department of Defense across the government. And if you can figure out how to kind of crack the code on developing an SBIR program within your company, and there's companies out there that do consulting around this that can help you do that, not for free, but if you can get your foot in the door and show some capability and show some commitment, it can be a pretty amazing. I mean, right now the DOD is our venture capital firm for all intents and purposes. It's non-dilutive capital. We retain all the IP. So we've used that funding to build up our platform and not just to build one-off solutions for the Air Force. So everything we do is dual use back to the commercial side of our business. So we can take that same capability into an ExxonMobil or a BP or a MasterCard or whomever. So what to look out for? It's a different world trying to sub to a big defense contractor like an SAIC or a BAE or a Lockheed Martin. It's a different mechanic. They have their ways of doing things. Trying to sub to them is incredibly difficult. But if you can get your foot in the door, it's an interesting way, and it's an opportunity to get started with the government.
So one thing I want to ask you about, since you are in this phase and you're working with the DOD, what's next on your roadmap for HTX Labs in terms of, you know, growing your company, reaching out into new industries? What do you have on your near to-do list and then down the road as well?
Yeah, we're definitely in a growth phase. We've tripled the size of the company in the past 2 years. So the silver lining to a global pandemic is that distance learning, remote instruction is a thing. Service members who can't get to the base, get to the flight line to train, or even anybody who's working virtually, you still need to train, you still need to get reps. So the pandemic and remote instruction, distance learning has been a boost to our company. So we're looking to hire another 20 people this year. So pretty much double our company again. So we're looking for, you know, historically we've hired lots of engineers. What we're now looking for is kind of the front of the house, so to speak, and build up a sales and biz dev team, more of a sales and biz dev, more operational capabilities. So we're trying to grow our company up, and not just focus on engineering so much. I think in 2022 and 2021, we were all about building capability, building out our platform. 2022 is all about adoption. So we're trying to drive, it's a land grab out there for doing what we're doing. So we're trying to drive adoption both within the government and outside of the government, commercial, private sector. There's huge opportunity. Oil and gas, being in Houston, oil and gas, petrochemical, a safety focus, being able to do orientation for somebody who's about to step onto an offshore drilling rig and never been there. Do that virtually versus physically is a much better way to train. It's a much safer way to train. So I think we have to figure that out. We haven't yet. Once again, lots of proofs of concept. I want to do a $50,000 pilot project just to kind of try this out. That's hard as a small startup to do that. So we've got to figure out how to make this a critical need, not a nice to have. And that's what we're working on right now from the commercial side.
In terms of growing your company and you know, doubling your team and then now looking to double it again, what have been the biggest challenges for finding talent and you know, training them and onboarding them, the whole process?
All of that. So onboarding, I mean, we are completely virtual right now. We have a presence at the Ion, but it's pretty light. And we've gotten comfortable in working virtually, and we've been very productive. So our engineering team is very good at leveraging Slack and Teams and Zoom and all of the productivity tools and onboarding people across five different time zones now. So the majority of our companies in Houston, we now are from Hawaii to North Carolina. So the pandemic has helped us understand that that the talent pool is, it can be much larger. But we still have 80% of our company is based in Houston, and that will always be our headquarters. But yeah, all of those things, onboarding, getting people hardware, getting people just to get together. Ashley and I were in, and some of our team were in Salt Lake City last week at an Air Force conference. And we were saying this morning, it was just nice to see people in person. And that's important, and it has to be important. And hopefully going forward, we can get back to that where we have an opportunity to spend more time physically together to brainstorm, strategize, go to market, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. What has it been like, you know, growing your team in this virtual capacity and still putting company culture at the forefront? I think it's pretty clear if you just like go to HTX Labs' website, you can see that you have developed a very intentional company culture. So what were some of the challenges with that, but also opportunities too with virtual company culture, I guess?
Yeah, no, it's something that we spend a lot of time on, and it is important. It's good that we're doing cool stuff, and VR is certainly cool stuff. But we don't do it because of that. We do it because we think it's highly valuable to our customers. But twice a week, we get the whole company together. So on Tuesday morning, we kind of have this Tuesday tag up, which is more business focused, more long-term strategy focused, and anybody can pop in on the Zoom call or not. And it's just really about where are we going, biz dev kind of stuff at a very high level. And then on Friday afternoon, 4 o'clock Houston time, we have our kind of State of the Union, or what it used to be, started out as a State of the Union, which more was also business and strategy, and has turned into kind of a everybody gets a demo, you get their favorite beverage, and you're on a Zoom call, and everybody gets to show some of the stuff they built that week. And once again, as a VR company, it's a target-rich environment for building really amazing stuff. So we usually go an hour and a half just to let everybody show what they built that week and talk about it. And it's an opportunity for me, who's not close enough to that, to sort of look at the capabilities and extract certain things to message and market to our customers. Because we're doing some things that clearly no one else is trying to do around immersive technology. I mean, we're building games which have been built forever, but these are serious games, and it's a platform that allows our customers to build pretty much whatever they want. And that's a much different approach than building a video game after a video game after a video game. So, so it gives me an opportunity to kind of see some of the amazing stuff that our team is building, and then figure out how do we monetize that? How do we package that? How do we market that and message that to the industries that we're targeting? So that's helped with our company culture. We have an amazing head of engineering who's very, very intentional about getting people engaged in what we're doing, getting them onboarded, giving them the tools and things they need to be successful and productive. So once again, if you're a team with just like, we're very engineering focused, but we put some leadership in place that I think has really helped us build that culture that helped us kind of survive and thrive through this pandemic.
Well, that sounds really cool, and an opportunity to like have some collaboration too with your coworkers who you don't get to see every day, but you get to see their work and kind of maybe even be inspired by what other people are doing. Speaking of VR in general, I want to zoom out a little bit and get your thought leadership on this moment that virtual and extended reality has had. I mean, I think, as you mentioned, it's something that started in this consumer space, but what really led to a perfect storm for VR to really get, you know, such a buzzy reputation, but also a very effective opportunity within various, you know, uses?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, virtual reality has been around for 4 or 5 decades, various attempts. You know, the beautiful thing about the military and the government is they've been using immersive technology for 40 or 50 years, just in big full motion simulators that cost tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. So we didn't have to, from our perspective, we didn't have to convince them that this is viable and valuable. What we had to help them understand is that we can take that same $10 million simulator and put it into a $400 headset without losing that much fidelity and having a really effective learning experience. The hardware And the evolution of hardware is, it has helped dramatically, going from 4 or 5 years ago where everything was full room scale, HTC Vive. You had to allocate 100 square feet of space to operate in, down to an Oculus Quest 2 portable headset that you can pop in your backpack and throw it on your face and learn or take a tour of the Vatican without leaving your home is really quite amazing. And that will continue to leapfrog and evolve the hardware. And so that's been really good. The metaverse, jury's still out on that from our perspective. I mean, we certainly talk about it. We think about it. But we're, you know, if it's a learning metaverse, we're all in, because that's where we think there's a great opportunity to get more people engaged in this technology and see the value of being able to learn, learn by doing, which is how people learn, which is how the next demographic that's coming into the workforce, they've grown up with a phone in their face. How do we capitalize on that? Not have them live in a headset 24/7, but how do we capitalize on that, that modality of learning that they're used to and accustomed to, and adapt our technology to address that. So yeah, I mean, it is a perfect storm. I think there's lots of companies, not lots, but there's a number of companies just like us that maybe used to be game studios and have seen this coming and have adapted to more of an immersive experience. So there's a lot of competition out there, which is good. Without competition, you're probably not doing something that's incredibly valuable to the market. So we're looking for partners that do what we do, but do a little bit differently, that are complementary to our capabilities. So that's another opportunity for us to grow our company is to look at some M&A activity. So yeah, I think it's getting a lot of press, and that's a good thing, as long as it's kind of press for the right reason.
Yeah. Well, expanding on that a little bit, one of my favorite questions to ask startup founders is essentially, you know, what keeps you up at night? You just listed a bunch of momentum that VR has, but what are those things you're watching very closely that could really affect what you're doing, for better or for worse? What are those factors?
I think I mentioned one, the metaverse, which does concern me, because I think if the metaverse is becomes synonymous with VR, AR, XR, living in a headset, I think that's not going to play out well. Ready Player One, great book, okay movie. Not, I think, where we really want to end up in the future. Certainly not what we're going after at HTX Labs. We're looking for kind of micro learning opportunities where somebody can pop into a headset, get some learning, get back out to the real reality and be better for it, be upskilled, reskilled. And that's what our mission is. It's really initially was around humanizing training. And that's really, you know, we're trying to put the student back at the center of the learning experience, not the teacher or the instructor. So that's probably, yeah, the metaverse is probably something that concerns me as much as anything. Not being venture backed, that concerns me. Having that runway and the latitude and the luxury of taking some chances. We're bootstrapped, so it's every day is a day to do either good or not good, and we have to be very intentional and methodical about what we go after, and we can't be everything to everybody. We have to be very, very focused.
That's very Houston of you. I feel like I can say that. But and I want to ask you about, you know, creating the company here in Houston, really alongside the development of Houston's innovation ecosystem. So, you know, how has that been? What has that process been like? Like I said, growing right alongside this innovation ecosystem here.
It was so different and so much better than back in the early 2000s. When we got, after I left the first startup, I joined another startup and left that. I went to, I basically had nowhere to go. So went to the search shack and connected up with JR. sat alongside Joe Allapat from Lion Guard and Moji, who's now with Savita. And we were trying to figure out what's the next step. And having that infrastructure of Station Houston and now the Ion, just to bump into people, to have those collisions, to collaborate, to ask questions. There's no stupid questions. No matter how many times you've been through a startup, it's always new and fresh, and there's always new challenges. We couldn't have done this without the Houston ecosystem, the innovation. We had lots of conversations with Gabby Rowe at Station about things we ought to do and what we shouldn't do. And we did something that she said we shouldn't do, and we just recently got out of that, and she was right. And it comes down to focus and really, looking at what you are good at and just stay that course and don't get distracted with those shiny objects. But the Houston ecosystem now versus the early 2000s is dramatically different. And I know, Austin is the center of the universe for startups, but Houston, it does have a different vibe. Like you say, it's so Houston of you. It's a small, big city with, great people, diversity, great opportunity. And our company will always be that and be a part of that.
I think Houston's definitely defined by, the people and this opportunity to really have a very supportive group around you. But yeah, no, the comment too was on just like the grit. I feel like I'm hearing that more. It's like entrepreneurs are gritty, like they get down and dirty and stuff. So that's kind of what I feel like I've seen that's been that difference maker. You don't always have to chase, big VC funding. If you've got a good product, you can find a different opportunity. So that's kind of what I see what you're doing. I don't know if you have any tips for anyone following that path too.
It's challenging, but it's also, it's a bit of a badge of honor. And I always, I've been thinking about putting this out on LinkedIn on a serious note, is how do you measure success? Is it by capital raised or is it by profitability and revenue? And I feel like a lot of it is around capital raised. Like we just raised 10 million or 100 million, but how does that translate to value to customer, value to shareholder? And we've taken a different approach and we've tried to raise capital. Not probably as intentionally as we probably should, but we've built a capability now and a platform and a technology that is highly de-risked. If it's good enough for the U.S. military to train their service members, it's probably pretty solid. So at this point, if we go out and raise capital, it'll be very smart capital. It'll be debt cap, debt. And it has to have partnership customers attached to it. It's not just runway. It's a different approach. And there are days when I wish we had, just because we'd have lower blood pressure and more runway. But this is just a different approach. And I don't know if it's easier or harder. It's just a different approach.
Yeah, normal.
And we're proud of what we've put together.
Yeah, I was gonna say normalize bootstrap companies, right? Like I completely agree. There's just tons of opportunities for capital. And I feel like a lot of people get bogged down with, I don't have enough venture capital. So you're a great example. And I'm sure a lot of people appreciated that perspective that you have. So definitely post that to LinkedIn. I will like it. And I think that'd be
a really good message.
Awesome. Well, Scott, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed this conversation and learning about, what HTX Labs is doing. Thanks again for your time.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks, Natalie.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.